name is Dan Picorni. I'm the John of Beverly Professor of Deaf Ministry on the campus, and I think it was that reason that led the powers that be to ask me to introduce our speaker for today at the convocation. A little bit of context to this is that I had a phone conversation with him a few days ago, and he informed me that at the moment in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's ministries among deaf people, there are 5 vacancies, to which I responded, "At the moment, I have nobody who has come forward willing to be a vicar or a candidate to go into deaf ministry." So you immediately see the context in which we're working. Our speaker today is Rod Reinierson. He's a graduate of this seminary. He came back to the seminary after his vicarage and got married. Shortly thereafter, he went into church growth mode, had 4 boys, and all of those were led to the Lord in baptism, and 2 of them made it through this seminary and are now pastors in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Rod served, first of all, in Spokane. He then went on to Rochester. He then became the superintendent or headmaster of the Detroit Lutheran School for the Deaf, which is the place that we got into deaf work in the first place, and managed to get a doctor of education there, and now is at the Synodical Office Building as the Secretary for Missions and Work Among Deaf and Blind People. And it's my pleasure to introduce him to you with this bit of information. Obviously, there are some people who don't hear too well. You've all met them. Some of you may have grandmothers who don't hear too well. There are some people on this campus who don't hear too well. And so the title of his talk actually was not as published, which was Isagogic, It's a Cult on the Handicap, which doesn't make too much sense. What he really said, it's a sect, that was it. It's a sect on the handicap. I think what the title was really supposed to be was Eisegesis and its Effect on the Handicap. Thank you very much. Rod Reinierson.
I would hope that the Lord of Life and Death, who we referred to in our epistle for Sunday, who is a Lord that encourages us to be forgivers, people with forgiving hearts, would bless our meeting. I deliberately picked a title which I thought would turn everybody off. Apparently I didn't do a good enough job, because look at all the people that came. I thought, you know, if you pick all those kinds of words, nobody knows what they mean anyway, and that they'll stay away or afraid that it's another theological lecture. I suppose I could have put it in plain English, but I was afraid of doing that for fear of the results. The plain English of this whole thing is, I wonder how much we are failing to do ministry because we read into the Bible things that I have a hard time finding there. That's bluntly the question I'd like to talk a little bit about. It seems to me that an awful lot of ministry is not occurring, and I'm beginning to get the sneaky feeling that one of the main reasons it's not occurring is that we have not listened too clearly to what the Bible says, especially when it says we are not of this world, we are only in it. The truth of the matter is, I never cease to be amazed at how many of us are of this world as well as being in it. Now, maybe I'm only talking about Luther's dilemma of being simultaneously a saint and a sinner, but I'm afraid that the effect of our eisegesis is that an awful lot of handicapped people don't get to hear about Jesus Christ. Please understand that when I use the word handicapped, I am using a word that I don't like, and an awful lot of other people don't like also. But I don't really have another word to describe them that is any better. I have generic terms. I can talk about deaf people, and I can talk about blind people, and I can talk about people that can't walk, and people with cerebral palsy, and Jerry's kids, and all this kind of stuff. But when you try and find an overarching term, I don't have an overarching term that is any less objectionable to me than the word handicapped. To the individual who has some kind of a physical difference, which the world has called a handicap, please understand that that word handicap feels terrible. It feels terrible. I do not know of any individual with a physical limitation who does not firmly and deeply believe that the word handicap has moral consequences deeply mixed into it, and all of those are a moral judgment that says, you're not any good, or at least you're not as good as I am. So please understand that the word handicap comes with, from their point of view, a moral connotation. If you think it's a neutral term, you haven't been listening what some of those people have been trying to say to you and I for years and years. People have physical differences. They do not hear like you and I do. They do not see like you and I do. They do not necessarily talk like you and I do. They may not walk like you and I do. They may not think like you and I do. But it's only basically our reaction to that and then their response to our reaction to that that creates a thing that's really called a handicap. A handicap is something that is placed upon someone. Now, I grew up out in Nebraska. I think every 25 miles there was a pony track. I knew from a child on what the word handicap means. You know what it means? To handicap the ponies is to put some lead in their saddle. You find out how the horses have been running. You take that all into account as you run this thing through a computer. And then you say, well, we'd kind of like to have an even race. We'd kind of like to have some people excited about putting some money into the turnstiles. So we'll handicap the better ones. We'll put some lead in their saddle. We'll slow them down a little bit, hoping that the whole race comes out even. For me as a kid, the word handicap was a word that always talked about racing. Since then, I've learned a little bit about it from another sport, although I've never been good enough in golf to get a handicap. I don't think they make a 287 handicap anyway. But at any rate, I always knew as a kid what the word handicap means, and I still think it might be a nice word if you really look at it from the standpoint of, gosh, look how much lead God put in the saddle of these individuals just to put them, bring them down to our level, just to make them a little bit like us. So maybe once in a while we could use that word handicap in a nice way, but I don't know of any other word. So I'm going to use it, but please understand I kind of spit every time in the back of my mind that I do use it. The word eisegesis I know is a word that you're supposed to spit at least that's all of what my professors taught me in my day. That's supposed to be a bad word. Exegesis means we look at the text and find out what it's saying and try and see what it means to us today. Eisegesis means we get ready for homiletics. Gosh, I thought I'd get a bigger one out of that. I can remember my homiletics prof saying, you weren't even close to the text, buddy. That wasn't a pretext. That was way out in left field. And I can remember a few sermons that I've listened to, too, where when it was all done, I wondered whether they really were serious at all about the fact that they read the text in the beginning. And I even more wonder whether they even began to listen to it and to see if it said anything. Because it seemed to me that often people do this thing. They take a text and they're so sure that they know what it means and they're so sure that they know what it says the rest of us are so sure that they were playing eisegesis again rather than exegesis. I think that there's a neat little bit of eisegesis going on in the world and in the church in terms of the handicapped. We all know the text from John 9. The blind man that was outside the temple. We all know what Jesus' disciples ask regarding that blind man. Who sinned, him or his parents? We also ought to all know that within the church today, almost everybody's still asking the same question. It is not unusual at all to hear that specific question still raised today about blind individuals and deaf individuals and mentally retarded individuals and physically disabled individuals within the church today. Well-meaning, loving, otherwise very active Christians play that game regularly. They regularly ask, who sinned, the guy or his parents? We are not out of the world yet. We are firmly rooted in the world, and we still act as if that question had never been answered. The question was answered, wasn't it? Jesus had a specific answer to that question. Remember the answer? The answer was, neither he nor his parents, but he is blind, that God might have glory. Now let's not kid ourselves, folks. Jesus did not say that guy never sinned, did he? Jesus did not say that. Because the truth is, with the exception of Jesus, there is absolutely nobody in all the world that has never sinned. Jesus did not say what so many people hear in that thing, that guy never sinned. The guy must have sinned at some time or other in his life. He was a human being. The guy's parents must have sinned at some time or another in their lives. They were human beings. So So many people have misheard that thing and assume that here is a guy that was immaculately conceived and without sin all of his life. And that's not what Jesus was saying, if we listen to it carefully. What Jesus was saying in that text is, don't connect sin and physical disability. Don't connect sin and physical disability. And yet the question that none of us have ever really answered is physical disability a sickness? Is the inability to hear or the inability to see a sickness? Most of us honestly, deeply, and firmly believe it is. If you scratch a person deep, you're going to find that. They really do think that a physical limitation, a physical difference, is equal to sickness. Now, we're all aware that the Bible very clearly says, and this is exegesis, not eisegesis, the Bible very clearly says there is a relatively direct link between the general concept of sin and the concept of sickness. Because we sin, we have illness. Now, don't mess this up and say, because I did a specific sin, I always have illness. There may be that occurring too. But certainly, there is a direct link between sin and sickness. In this lesson, Jesus said, there is no direct link, though, between sin and physical disability. And yet we have always, with some kind of form of logic that I don't think I'll ever understand, we have always said that sickness equals disability or disability equals sickness. Look at the headings on any one of these texts. The heading to John 9 is Jesus heals the blind man. The heading to Mark 7:31 is Jesus heals the deaf man. Now go to a dictionary and look up the word heals. By definition, you got to be sick first. Look it up. By definition, you got to be sick first, or you can't get healed. The assumption written in that caption is the assumption of an awful lot of Christians, that the disabled are sick, and that there is a direct link between that disability and the general concept of sin. Let me try a question on you. You all know Mark 7. Jesus and the deaf man. Notice I left out the word healing. Jesus and the deaf man. What did the people want from Jesus the day they brought that deaf man to him? What did the people want from Jesus the day they brought that deaf man to him? My hearing must be very bad. I don't hear anybody answering anything. Are you trained not to talk? Is that what the problem is? What did Jesus want? And what did the people want from Jesus? You can look it up. Some of you got Bibles, that's okay. What did they want? You know what they got, don't you? You know what they got. They brought a man to Jesus. Jesus took him off to the side, stuck his fingers in his ears, spat and touched his tongue. And what did they get? They got a hearing. I suppose that's the opposite of a deaf person, isn't it? A hearing? Hearings are nice people. I'm glad I don't have a daughter. That way I don't have to worry about whether she could marry them or not. With all due respect to hearing people. What do they want? They got a hearing, didn't they? The guy's ears were open. The guy's tongue was loose, and he spoke immediately. Is that what they wanted? I don't think so. I really don't think so. Else, why do the next verses occur? Are you surprised when you get things you ask for? Are you surprised when you work hard and plan for something and go ahead and pull this thing off and then you're surprised? I'm not. When I work for something and I plan for something and I do all my homework and I pray to the Lord and he gives me an answer to that question, I don't get surprised. I get thankful. I get a few other things. I get to go to work. But I don't get surprised. Those people were genuinely surprised at what happened next, remember? They were amazed, the lesson says. Their mouths dropped away in sheer shock. They never once really seemed to want what they got. What did they want? Some of you by now have opened Bibles and are looking in them.
What did they want?
That's right. They wanted him to touch them. Now that same verb to lay hands on, is the one that's going to be used in Mark 10. Some people brought children to Jesus. What did they want? They wanted him to lay hands upon them. Were all those children deaf? Heavens, no. Were all those children blind? Heavens, no. All those children were children. They didn't want healing. They wanted touching. They wanted Jesus to reach out and touch, to quote a commercial. So often, you and I have read that text, the Mark 7 text, and we've assumed, and I hope you know how bad that word is, remember, assume means I make a something or other out of you and me, those first three letters. We've assumed that this is a story that had as its goal a miracle, and that miracle occurred. And that's not, apparently, the purpose of the story at all. That story doesn't belong to the health and sciences department. That story belongs to an entirely different department. The story started out with, some people brought a man to Jesus. This is an evangelism text, folks. This is an evangelism text. This is a text for all of us. Our function in life is to bring people to Jesus. Our privilege in life is to bring people to Jesus. And if you were to read some of the Greek text, and I'm in here now, you've got to play with the footnotes and all that kind of stuff, but that's why the profs work so hard to teach us this. If you read some of the texts say some people brought a man to Jesus, and oh, by the way, the guy couldn't hear. And that's how significant it was in that text. And oh, by the way, not a big deal. The guy couldn't hear. Frankly, folks, after having spent 30 years in ministry with blind people and deaf people and mentally retarded people and all that kind of people, that's how much significance a physical handicap ought to have. Oh, by the way, let's not get excited about this thing. Let's not think it's big and important and all that kind of stuff. What's important is Jesus Christ. What's important is that we bring people to Jesus Christ so they can have the same kinds of blessings that we have. What's important is that Jesus Christ reaches out and touches us. What's important is that Jesus Christ hopefully reaches out and touches other people. Ministry is sharing Jesus Christ, feeling Jesus Christ. And yet so many of us are thrown back, literally thrown back, when we approach an individual who's physically different. And I really, after years and years of sweating with this thing, I really believe that our problem is eisegesis. Our problem is eisegesis. If we ever will get over the fact that we want to bring a concept from the world that less than the norm is abnormal, bad, not good, we take that concept from the world and we jam it right into the church. And we say, if you can't walk, tough. We got 13 steps leading into this building. Let somebody carry your wheelchair up with you in it. Friends, there's nothing in the world that's harder on a person's feeling of self-esteem and desire to worship their Lord than to have to be carried in a wheelchair up 13 steps, as in fact my mother was for 13 years of her life, because the church just didn't think that what the world was saying in terms of accessibility applied to the church. After all, we can walk. Apparently, God's picking on her. Why would we solve her problem? Hear it? Hear the eisegesis there. Why would we solve her problem? God's punishing her for her sins, or somebody's, you know. Why are we going to solve that problem? Ministry in the church with the handicapped, I humbly submit he is regularly shafted because of our eisegesis. Because we keep making a parallel between sickness and disability. And folks, there was a prof here a few years back who said, when you got a problem, read the book. Now that was Arthur Carl Pieponer, and he wanted me to read the Confessions. I've read them. They're nice. Don't misunderstand me. But there's another book that I think is nicer, and Arthur Carl Pieponer loved that book too. Don't misunderstand me on that one. There's another book that I think is nicer, and it's called The Holy Bible. And I've read it. And I've read it just like Dr. Arthur Carl Pieponer taught me. He said, when you got a problem, you read it, and you keep asking every word you read, how does that problem apply? I've read it. I'm afraid that at this point yet, I cannot find, I'm glad to have anybody convince me of this, I cannot find a passage in the Bible that says there is a direct connection between sin and physical disability. I can't get the two to go together. I can't get that. I can do it by eisegesis. Sure, I can do anything by eisegesis. You can play a game you want to that. It's a wide open ballpark. But I cannot get the book, God's Word, to tell me that there is that connection. Now, of course, I know what's going to come next. Some nice, pious person who's read Job is going to remember that in Job, God had this little debate, discussion with someone, and God permitted that someone to do certain things. The devil really screwed up Job's life for a little while there, didn't he? God permitted the devil to destroy Job's possessions and permitted the devil to finally even touch his body and cause illness. Well, out of this, into the dogmatics books, then comes a great big long section called God's permissive will. God doesn't do this thing, but God does occasionally permit it to occur so that, I'll go back to John, his glory may be seen. Okay, I know what's going to come next. Somebody's going to say, okay, if you're going to attack the sacred practical theology of the church that says the disabled are less good, and you're going to say, no, we can't connect those two, we certainly will next connect God's permissive will with physical disabilities. Folks, I would like to humbly suggest one more time, you're playing eisegesis. And if you want to play that and you want to say it out loud that you're playing it, I guess that's your privilege. But that's not the stance of a humble, obedient Christian servant. I don't think. I think the stance of a humble, obedient Christian servant is to listen to what God says rather than tell God what we think he says. You got in your chapel this banner over on the left-hand side as I face the altar, which has at the top of it a burning bush. Remember? A burning bush. You all know the story of the burning bush, don't you? Moses was out wandering one day taking care of his sheep, a little bit bored with the whole process, looks up onto the hill and he sees this burning bush and he says to himself, oh my gosh, isn't this magnificent? I go up, get that thing, I take it home, my wife will quit bugging me about making a fire. You know, this has got to be one of the greatest things that I've ever seen. So Moses, he goes, how about that price of Jesus, by the way, guys? I haven't touched the doctrine of it yet, don't notice. I'm just touching the way the story was told. So he goes up on the hill, and he's going to look at this bush. And he gets up there, and he hears voices. Now, this guy's not batty. He's not flipped these marbles. He hears real voices. He hears God's voice. Take off your shoes, Moses. You're on holy ground. So he does it. What happens next? God says, hey, Moses, I got good news for you. You just volunteered to go down to Egypt and take care of my people. You know what happens when someone says to you, you just volunteered? That's what happened to Moses, by the way, folks. Moses heard that sentence clearly. And he says, no way, Lord. I'm not volunteering. No way. And, you know, he got a whole bunch of excuses. Read this again, by the way. This is not that bad of a quotation of Exodus chapters 2, 3, and 4. He's got a whole bunch of excuses why he can't go back to Egypt. And you know, some of those excuses aren't that bad. He had killed somebody down there, hadn't he? They're not that bad. But they're also nothing more than excuses, and God doesn't accept them until he gets to one. Remember the one that God sort of accepted? I can't speak. Have you ever seen a worse miscasting in your life than to cast Carlton Heston as Moses? Moses couldn't speak. He obviously couldn't speak because God says, Aaron, your brother, will be your spokesperson. There's a lot of good and truth in this statement, and there's a lot of problem every time you watch the Ten Commandments with Carlton Heston playing that role, because that's the wrong cast person. Moses couldn't speak. Now, I'm going to quote Exodus chapter 4, verse 11. Who was it that made the deaf? Who was it that made the blind? Who was it that made the lame? Is it not I, said the Lord? Now, folks, I've played with that word made. It's not the same one that you find earlier in Genesis where it says God made some things. It isn't the word for created out of nothing. But I've played with that word made, and I cannot find any place in the whole Old Testament where it says the word made is equal to the word God permitted it to happen. I think those are fundamentally different words. I think that if we take this text seriously, the truth is that God made some people who can hear, and God made some people who can't hear. And if I'm going to play a moral game that says because you can't hear, I'm a little bit better than you, guess what I am? I am clearly and cleanly a sinner. I'm no longer playing eisegesis. I'm now clearly and cleanly a sinner. And if you and I are going to say clearly to some 200,000 people in the United States that you can't worship today because you can't hear me when I flap my lips, folks, I submit we are clearly and cleanly sinners. And we ought to admit it and not play games. But we do it every day of our lives. We do it to the deaf. We do it to the blind. We do it to the physically limited. Every day of our lives, we are saying to them, if you can't come up those steps, and if you can't read that Lutheran worship book, and if you can't hear me when I flap my lips, just don't worship, folks. Just don't praise your Lord, folks. Just don't learn about your Savior. Just don't grow in faith. Just don't be a Christian. Oh, we do it so nicely. We do it so easily. We're busy people. Years ago, when I was a student here, I used to think that going around in circles might make me a big wheel. In the meantime, I've learned that a loose nut also goes around in circles. That keeps me humble, folks. Frequently, when I'm out running that treadmill, I suspect I'm nothing more than a loose nut. And somebody ought to tighten me down. But time and time again, as I go out, when am I supposed to quit, Nan? About now? Okay, I'll quit in just a minute. Time and time again, as I go out and travel, I hear people say, oh, we don't have any deaf in our congregation. Oh, we don't have any blind around us. Oh, we don't have any physically handicapped here. And you know, then I just love to play my game. That's just an invitation for me to have fun. I'll go and see the Sunday school kids. Just go talk to the Sunday school kids for a little while. It'll help your reality therapy anyway, because God said, there's the kingdom. And you ask those kids, do you know anybody that can't hear? And up go the hands, and down goes the mouth of the pastor. Do you know anybody that can't see? And up go the hands, and down goes the mouth of them leaders that told me, oh, we don't have any. Friends, God's command to evangelize the world did not say, evangelize those like us. And now I'm not talking about race, and I'm not talking about language. I'm talking about physical abilities. God makes some who can't hear, and God makes some who can't talk, and God makes some who can't see, and God makes some who can't walk, and God makes some who's having a different intellectual level than I do. And every one of those people needs to feel the touch of your Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. It is my humble prayer that you'll quit playing eisegesis, and that one of these days you'll hear Jesus say to you, well done, thou good and faithful servant. You brought someone to me who, oh, by the way, Thank you.
I'll be happy to take any questions that anyone might have. Please. You're not making a good logical connection, because we can find all kinds of passages in the Bible that talk about Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. If we want to make a summary of that, that's different. But there's a big difference between my taking a clear statement in the Bible about Father, Son, and Holy Spirit and saying, all right, I'll summarize that under Trinity, and then my turning around and saying, but I want to take something that is clearly not connected in the Bible, or at least I haven't been able to find the connection, and say that sin equals, that sickness equals disability. I think you're on a very different logical level. I hear you, but I played that game, and I can't find it. I can't find any place in the Bible that connects those two as you and I and everybody else in the world regularly do.
Yes, please, over there, and I'll go over here.
The people whom Jesus ministered to by restoring their sight or their hearing, does Jesus, you think, see something lacking in them when he does that?
Can you all hear the question, or do I have to repeat the question in order to get it on the tape? No, I don't think Jesus sees something lacking in them. I really think that the Creator God, and remember the Son participated in that whole process. Without him was nothing made that was made. But the Creator God gives blessings to his people as he chooses. And I think that God, Jesus in this case, who saw a very nice man, a very man who, from my point of view, was very whole, he saw him and decided to give him a blessing that he had not had to date. From my point of view, yes. From the blind or the deaf, usually not. They don't have any need for it. I hear you clearly, and I'm running the thing through, and I hate to give a quick answer, because that might just say I'm not listening. That's part of the reason I'm hedging on this whole thing. I hear you quickly, but on the opposite side, I also hear my deaf and blind friends saying they have no need to hear or to see. And I also hear the world regularly saying, because they can't hear or see, they're bad people. And I'm trying to put all of those together. I hear you clearly. But I think that an awful lot of the world is impinging upon this discussion, that we're again making the assumption that we have to have two legs and we have to have two arms and we have to have ears that hear. And, you know, that's a fascinating phrase. Let him who has ears to hear listen. Is it possible that in that phrase our Lord was saying there are some people who have ears to hold up their glasses? They can't hear. I don't have a quick answer for you. I hear you very clearly, and I've been wrestling with this thing for a long, long time. I understand what you're saying in terms of the world needing the gospel even though they don't feel that need. I can clearly hear that. But on the other hand, I kind of think that you're opening up a door that is going to allow most of the church still to run through and say, these people lack something. And that's the word I'd like to avoid. I think the Bible's word is give sight, open ears. You know, there's some very specific kinds of verbs there, none of which are heal, none of which are restore. The guy didn't have it before. I can't put it back in the storehouse again, say. I think that in most of those cases, all God is saying is that this guy who looks like this is someday going to have a different body. My body will be like unto his. I will be glorified like his. God's going to change me. And if he wants to change some people now, and he doesn't want to change some other people now, that's the loving act of a loving God. From the world's point of view, it definitely is a benefit. Yeah, I don't. From Jesus' point of view, I don't. I can't quite give the answer that I guess I could have given years ago.
That only means that he's going to come back again and speak on Jesus' point of view of the handicapped after more research, right? All right, over here. Let's start with Mike.
I'm wondering what happens to an eschatological interpretation of those actions of Jesus, in the sense that by doing those different things, he was showing his work of bringing the eschaton, of bringing a completion, as far as I see it.
Yeah, I hear you. I've wrestled a little with that one. What does the Isaiah text say? And that's what he's making reference to and you're making reference to, that in that day the deaf will hear and the blind will see and all this kind of. What does the Isaiah text say? And I've wrestled with those quite a while. I guess a related question, I don't really have a good answer for you. A related question is, will there be deaf in heaven? And a long time ago, I would have very quickly answered no. A long time ago, I would have very quickly answered no, because from my point of view, I guess I've always believed that in heaven, the glorified body will of necessity be able to hear. On the other hand, I'm not so able to say that anymore today. I'm not so able to say that after having worked with deaf people for 30 years. The deaf certainly have heard the word of the book, which is a specific quotation from Isaiah. They certainly have heard the word of the book. Now, they haven't done it with their ears. They've done it with their eyes, but they've heard it, and they very clearly heard it. There are now some, 5,000 Missouri Synod Lutherans and a lot of other Christians, too. But, there are a lot of them that have heard the good news, not with their ears, with their eyes. So they have to hear with their ears in order to have the eschaton occur. I can't answer anymore. That's a presupposition from my point of view. I've got to hear with my ears. But can't I just as easily hear with my eyes? Can't I just as easily see with my fingers? Why must it be done in my way? Why must it be normal? Yeah, I got myself into a lot of hot water recently when I said that a good friend of mine died and was up in heaven teaching God to sign more accurately. You know my friend, don't you, Dan? And a lot of people said, God doesn't even sign. And I said, well, that one doesn't make sense. God knows everything. So that part of it doesn't make more sense. The concept, though, of God signing inaccurately was meant to be humorous, and I hope you understood it that way. But I'm not so sure that my friend wouldn't try to correct him anyway, because he always did that all of his life.
I can't answer your question anymore. You're making an assumption that I'm no longer able to make, and that is that I must hear with my ears. I could just as easily hear with my eyes. I'm not so sure that the communication in heaven is going to be in American English. My grandmother was sure it was going to be in German.
Okay, I think we had a person waiting over here, then we'll try to get back there and around. So why don't you start?
Fine, I don't know if I'll put on what you said correctly or not, but as far as Jesus healing the blind man or healing the deaf person because he saw something lacking, well, I lived with a deaf person and a mentally retired person for 2 years, mainstreaming them in society. And even though on their spiritual level they would realize that all of us are lacking spiritually, that's why Christ came. But as far as Christ healing people, he did it out of compassion because he realized that hearing, seeing is a good gift. And my roommate who was deaf, yes, he wanted to hear more than anything else. And my roommate who was retarded wished he could have thought, not because that made him a better person spiritually, but these are good gifts from God, and yes, it opens up new doorways to this world. Therefore, yes, Christ saw something lacking, not as spiritually this person was not on the same level, but all good gifts come from God, meaning hearing.
I would say that there's a Bible passage that probably applies here, too, and that is, was there only one widow in all of Israel in those days? Was there only one deaf man in all of Israel in those days? Was there only one blind man in all of Israel in those days? If healing was that great of a thing, why weren't more healed? By the way, again, an exegetical problem, the word kophos, which means blunt or shut in some form or another, that's the common word for deafness. The word kophos appears some 27 times in 9 different stories in the New Testament. It's just unfortunate that in our English Bibles, in 8 of those occasions, it talks about the dumb rather than the deaf. It's the same word. I don't know why they did this. But in the Mark 7 story, kophos, this guy's deaf. In the rest of the stories, he can still be kophos, but he's not deaf, he's dumb. And again, there's an exegetical problem that you may want to play around with. It seems there were a lot more deaf in Palestine than that one guy.
Just to add something from my own experience, when I was at Gallaudet University, we were working on, at the time when We Shall Overcome was very, very popular, and a verse that said, in that day the deaf shall hear, right? And got a very violent reaction from one of the deaf professors at Gallaudet, who said, to say that implies that when we get to heaven, all people will be white. You see? So from the deaf person's point of view, that's not always the case. You had your hand up for a long time.
What is the whole point of the process of restoring the person's abilities, though? I mean, didn't you, on your exegesis part, didn't you highlight what was the purpose of Christ doing that? Did he say so that he could be glorified? Wasn't Christ restoring people a process for others to see his glorification? We cannot, through any means today, unless, of course, it's just a physical thing that a doctor can change, we can't restore a person's sight. If God came today, God is the one that restores a person's sight, restores a person's ability. The purpose for people in the prophecy was that you can't do anything for those blind people, you can't do anything for those deaf people, but when God comes, he will restore that, and the purpose isn't the purpose, the restoration for glory of God and for our people to understand his deity.
You can have a nice long discussion now on the word sign, which is the technical word for a miracle. And at least in my day, they had a whole class on the thing, so you might want to take it if they still have it around. Which is very important in terms of your answer. I think, though, you're not right. I think that yes, it was an obvious good that we saw his glory in that specific instance of this man who now could see, John 9. But on the other hand, I think that we can see all kinds of Jesus' glory
in all kinds of people today who have the same kind of limitations and who can't see with their eyes, but who, you know, I hear you, but I think you're missing the point. I think the point of that story was an evangelism point. It was as much to tell us to do something as opposed to wait around for God to do something and make them hear and then tell them about Jesus, which is what a lot of people are doing in the church. They're waiting for him to make them hear and then... Again, I have a little trouble with that one because I work my way through it, and the word there is, your faith has not restored you, but your faith has saved you. Zozo is the word there, and I'm not so sure that you ought to go from the salvation concept to the physical ability concept. I'm not so sure you're not making a jump there that isn't in the text and isn't warranted by the text. Oh, I didn't hear you say that. I didn't hear you say that. But I did. Well, but he also gave some people the ability to not see. Okay. I hear you, but what's the conclusion? Where do we go next? Do we stand around, do we, the church, stand around waiting for Jesus Christ to come back and make them see again? Or do we, the church, help them see Jesus Christ? In this case, I'm going to do it through a thing called the Lutheran Braille Library, and I got my good friend Leroy Delafosse here from California who's in charge of Lutheran Braille Workers, and you know, I'm not going to hang around waiting for the question of restore or heal or any of those things. I'm going to bring people to Jesus. Well, let's not go too deep into that one, but I'll go along with you and say yes in that story. But remember in the story, the other two stories that we're dealing about, it was really Christ that went to the blind man. And in the case of the deaf man, it was really some friends probably who brought them. So I understand what you're saying. In your case, that's very correct. But I don't know that we can generalize it over a whole population. And my point I was hoping today, though, was that we would talk about what do we do.
Okay, way over here.
Both your acts of Jesus and your eyes of Jesus are really challenging. I think that's what's fostering this kind of discussion. It seems to me that your objective is a worthy one, and it is to deal with this problem by seeing people who are different from us as not being different in any moral qualities. Now, I'm not so sure any of us have significant problems with
I'll make a judgment call on this and say this is the last answer to the last question because we're running out of time.
Thank you. Thank you for, one, hearing what I was saying, and two, doing a good job of summarizing it. My response to the one phrase is a little bit like Ziggy. I'm always willing to admit that I feel guilty because I am guilty. And maybe I was laying a guilt trip on you only to do a little reality therapy and say, it seems to me that often the church has made excuses to not serve these people when all those were excuses. They were not reasons at all. They were nothing more than, I just really am not going to get this very high on my priority scale. I don't think the church is uncaring, but I think that occasionally in certain instances it shows itself to be very uncaring. And that was what I was trying to say, not the general judgment, but in some very specific cases we've been uncaring. Let me give you an example. I had a worship service up in a church in Rockford the other night, Rockford, Illinois, and it was for deaf people, and one of those deaf people was in the wheelchair, and that church happens to have one of these electric chairs that goes up and down the steps, which are expensive. I wouldn't deny that at all. But fascinatingly enough, the assistant pastor of the congregation was holding a confirmation class in the classroom at the top of the steps. And that gentleman, and I have said this to his face, so I'm not breaking Matthew 18, that gentleman told us to go down 9 steps, across a quarter, up 24 steps to get to where we could have used that ramp. Do you understand how hurt my deaf friend felt that night from a, quotes, caring individual? I think we ought to feel guilty sometimes. I think we really have blown it. I wasn't intending today to do anything in terms of positive statements. I don't, you know, because you have to get very specific. If you've got some specific questions, I'd love to answer that. That's a thing that I do regularly. My job is to try and find ways to overcome those reasons and excuses and to find some very specific solutions to some very specific problems. Today I was really only trying to create a discussion in a sense, and I admit that I was doing it from a negative standpoint, and I deliberately wanted to do it. I'm sorry if it hurt you, obviously. That I would be sorry about if it hurt anybody. But I really do think that someday we've got to face up to the issue that we are all abnormal, just some of us in different ways than other people, and that we all want people to treat us somehow or another as Christian brothers, Christian sisters, and as people who are trying to bring ourselves into a position where we can feel the loving touch of Jesus. That's really all I was trying to set up, was a start. Thank you, though.
I want to thank you, Rod, for coming. Our time is up. If any of you want to corral him before he gets out of the room, you're certainly welcome to do that. And I think you've opened up some areas that we might want to discuss further. I know that they always come up in the course I teach on ministry to people with special needs. And perhaps we'll have you back again. Thank you very much.